I remember the last time I rode public transit. It was last March. Seriously. And yes, I know. I'm lucky. I've been working here safe in the basement, and I haven't had to crowd onto a bus or a subway. And I'm not alone. There are hundreds of thousands of Canadians coast to coast who used to take public transit twice a day, 5 days a week, and now they just don't. So that means there is less money available to keep transit service at normal levels. A lot less. But of course, there are still millions of Canadians who rely on public transit. Canadians who don't have a choice, who need to get to work. And for them, transit needs to be clean and safe and reliable. And that costs money. More money, it turns out, during a pandemic. So what have transit agencies across the country done to maintain that service? How have they coped with rising costs and ridership numbers that have dropped off a cliff? When will they be forced to make some tough choices? And how will public transit in Canada's largest cities look different when, eventually, some of us return to the office? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Ben Spurr is the transportation reporter at the Toronto Star. He looked at transit services across Canada in the pandemic. Hello, Ben.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can you maybe start today by just giving me a sense of scale in terms of what the pandemic has done to transit ridership in Canada? I have not, for the record, been on public transit since March.
Yeah, and you're certainly not alone. The sort of top line numbers, I guess, is that in April of last year, across the country, transit use dropped to about 17% of what it had been the same month the year before. So an 83% drop that pretty much occurred almost overnight, that within, you know, a week or two, cities across the country went into lockdown and people stopped using transit. And so from that kind of low point of last spring, ridership has started to creep back up. But with the second wave, of course, it's not rocketing back anytime soon. So across the country, ridership is now at about 40% of what's normal. So it's still nowhere near where it used to be.
Is there going to be some sort of that drop that becomes permanent even once a vaccine comes in? Because I do know, you know, again, anecdotally, some folks who have purchased cars during this and don't want to take transit to work again.
Yeah, I think there's going to be long-term effects of COVID on public transit use for sure. No one I've talked to is expecting a return to normal transit ridership once, for instance, the vaccine is widely available. Even after that happens, even when you know, going outside and it's much safer than it is now, we're not going to see things go back to normal right away. And there's just a couple of factors there. I think people's work habits have changed. There's lots of more people who are working from home now, and so won't need to commute every day via public transit. Public transit use is normally closely tied to the economy. When the economy is doing well, when lots of people are working, public transit use ticks up. In past recessions, for instance, we've seen public transit ridership dip. So I think if there's any kind of long-term or even immediate kind of near-term economic negative impact from COVID, we're going to see transit ridership be kind of in a depressed state for a while.
We're going to talk in a second about what's unique about the pandemic situation in terms of how well the government is supporting transit. But in a normal situation, taking away COVID-19, how closely is transit service tied to ridership? You know, what would happen in a normal situation with that kind of dip in ridership?
Yeah, it's a difficult question to answer. I mean, I think there's no precedent for this. Of course, there's no playbook for this kind of overnight, rapid, steep drop in public transit use. But actually, what's kind of interesting is the kind of closest analog, I think, would be previous periods of economic recession where you started to see transit ridership go down. In response to that, kind of notoriously in Toronto, at least in the early 90s, there was a drop in TTC use. And what happened was that the city started to cut the TTC budget and roll back service. And that kicked off what people have described as a transit death spiral. And what's happened there is that public transit, of course, is only kind of useful if it's reliable, right? If you know that you're going to that you can walk out your door and go to the corner and a bus will come on in maybe 5 or 10 minutes, then that's a useful service for you. But if you have to wait, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, you're going to pretty quickly find another way to get around. So there's a kind of level where if you start to scale back transit service in response to lower ridership, you actually start to drive people away from taking the service, and that reduces ridership even more. So it's this kind of vicious cycle. So that's happened in the past where transit agencies have cut back and then led to the years-long sustained drop in ridership. And that's what a lot of people at the start of the pandemic, a lot of experts and people I spoke to at Toronto City Council, for instance, were really worried was going to happen as a result of COVID, and that so far we haven't seen.
So we haven't seen a lot of service cuts across the country.
Yeah, so there has been service cuts. So I think the latest figures from the Canadian Urban Transit Association is that in December, operators across the country were operating at about 87% of normal service, so a 13% cut, which isn't nothing, but it certainly hasn't fallen as far as demand has. So demand is only at about 40% of normal. So providing 87% is well above demand. And the reason why that is that the federal and provincial governments have come forward with significant funding to keep transit operators afloat. Because of course, transit agencies get the vast bulk of their revenue from the fare box, right? So when riders aren't taking the service, their sources of funding dry up very quickly. So they've had to rely on federal and provincial bailouts essentially to keep operating. And there's some nervousness, certainly last year, that it took some time for the federal and provincial governments to reach an agreement, but they did come forward with funding and it has allowed agencies to continue operating at something close to normal.
Is there a limit to that funding? Because to your point earlier, you know, the ridership is not going to come all the way back, quite likely. And knowing federal and provincial governments, they don't tend to hand out this kind of support indefinitely.
Yeah, as with other sectors, you know, I think some people are seeing the situation with transit as and COVID as being something of an opportunity in the middle of this crisis. For a long time, in Ontario, for instance, the provincial government would actually provide regular operating funding every year to transit agencies like the TTC. They stopped that in the mid 90s, and basically the city had to take on a lot of those costs, and the city has limited funding compared to the provincial government. And so now with the situation where the province has stepped forward and provided operating funding to get through this pandemic, you have some people who say, you know, that needs to become permanent now, that cities, in order to operate, you know, robust transit systems until ridership returns to normal, we're going to need some kind of assistance from the province. And so there are advocates and people on city council who have long said the province should help fund transit operations in a big city like Toronto that, you know, is an economic engine of the province. They need to keep doing that for the foreseeable future.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Even aside from just maintaining service amidst declining ridership, what other costs have transit agencies faced with the pandemic? You know, I imagine there are things like masks and operator safety and a ton of stuff they couldn't have anticipated.
Yeah, yeah. They've, you know, early on in the pandemic, agencies realized that they had to take measures to change their operations and try to make them as safe as possible for people who did need to continue to ride. They've made masks mandatory for riders and for employees at most agencies. They've, you know, done things like tried to encourage social distancing by putting up barriers in stations, for instance, or putting on decals on station platforms. That they've had to invest heavily in things like hand sanitizer for their employees and for the public, blocking off certain seats on vehicles to help encourage social distancing. So all of that comes with a cost. It's not quite as much of a cost as the really steep revenue loss as a result of fewer riders, but it is you know, millions of dollars in additional costs for those kind of anti-COVID measures.
In the near term, are we likely to see any changes of approach from transit agencies to their schedules, to how they operate? Because again, you know, we've already spoken about who is using transit and who's not, and I can't imagine the downtown business commuters that have traditionally been, I guess, a big part of the transit picture are as important as they used to be.
Yeah, so that's a really good point. In Toronto, for instance, you know, our subway system has been designed to kind of funnel people into the downtown core during the day and then take them back home. But during the COVID crisis, that pattern's completely gone. There's far fewer people are taking the subway system, for instance, than the bus network out in the more suburban areas of Toronto. So subway service or ridership on the subway is about 24% of what it used to be. While on buses, it's about 41%. And I've spoken to some researchers, a researcher in Australia, actually, who's done some really interesting work predicting that there could be a sustained 30% reduction in people commuting downtown, even once the worst of the crisis is over. And so that does change how you have to operate your transit system. You know, we're seeing the people who are still kind of relying on public transit in Toronto during the crisis are people who don't live downtown, who aren't working in finance, for instance, and going to Bay Street or something. They're essential workers at food processing plants, at groceries, at healthcare facilities. And they're people who don't have an option other than to take transit in the form of bus lines, which are kind of generally seen as less glamorous modes of service that don't get as much attention. But I think one thing that we could expect to see going forward is transit authorities paying much more attention to those bus lines outside of the downtown core, ensuring that there's enough service there to adequately service people, but also to keep people safe in the near term, right? Where we want to operate as much service as possible so that crowding is kept at a minimum and that there isn't a danger of spreading the virus.
When you talk to people at the STM in Montreal or the TTC in Toronto, is that something they're actively planning for, like a rethinking of routes and schedules to adjust to a new kind of city when this is over?
Yeah, so in Toronto, for instance, the TTC, they've cut service on subway and streetcar lines, but headed into this year, they're actually operating more bus service than they were before the pandemic hit. So I think that shows you the kind of new pattern that's emerging. And I think there is going to be much more focus on those lines outside of the downtown core, and also just a shifting of priorities, right? Because normally, of course, you would see the heaviest transit use during the morning and afternoon rush hours where people are going to their offices. But if more people start to work from home or work slightly less regular hours where they might spend, you know, some of their day at home and some of their day at the office, that pattern evaporates, right? We're not going to see those huge spikes in the morning and afternoon. And so therefore, the transit agencies can actually be a bit more flexible. So the demand will be more evenly spread out throughout the day. And that's actually probably a good thing for transit operators and for riders, right? We might not see that really heavy crowding in those peak rush hour periods, and it could be a bit more of a less crowded, safer, and kind of more relaxed commute, and transit agencies will kind of apply their service accordingly.
In the bigger picture, how are these agencies framing their approach as we go into 2021 and beyond? Because it used to be an approach that was pretty carefully tied to getting more buses to the busiest routes and, you know, following where ridership goes. And I don't know if that kind of approach is possible right now.
Yeah, I think there's a real push and an attitude among Canadian transit agencies to do what they can to sort of stay the course, right? While there is going to be a kind of long-term effect of the pandemic, I think there's a recognition that things are kind of really bad right now, but hopefully won't be as bad within a couple of months, right? So they're trying to kind of get through this crisis of much, much lower ridership and hoping to get back to something approaching normal. But I thought it was kind of interesting. For example, in Montreal, STM, they're operating the same level of service they did before the pandemic. They're planning to operate that this year and next year. And the CEO of STM actually kind of framed it as a moral obligation to keep doing that, right? To operate a transit system that allows essential workers during this crisis to continue to go to work and also allows them to do so safely, right? If you start to cut service, then vehicles get much more crowded and then they could be less safe. While the virus is still circulating. So the STM has framed it as their kind of duty to keep a kind of fully functioning transit service out there. And I think a lot of other agencies across the country are thinking the same thing.
Does that approach, maybe combined with the advocates you mentioned who are looking for funding, do you see any of that making its way up the government chain? I mean, this has really revealed what's an essential service and what's not over the course of the past year.
Yeah, I think what transit agencies might say and the leaders I've talked to are pretty heartened by the fact that the province and feds have come forward with operating funding for transit systems. I think they see that as a recognition from government that transit agencies are really important for cities and we need healthy transit systems if we want to have functional cities both during and after the pandemic. The question is how long that does last, right? If transit agencies are facing long-term budget shortfalls, whether there will be appetite for provinces in particular to come forward with some kind of steady operating funding. The other possibility and something that advocates and government officials are pushing for is for greater diversity in the revenue streams for public transit. So, for instance, in Toronto, the operating budget of the TTC, it's two-thirds of it comes from the fare box. So it's really vulnerable to a sudden drop in ridership like this. Whereas potentially if there was a greater mix of funding streams, if transit was paid for using parking taxes or road tolls, something like that, it could be more protected from ridership drops. So the TTC has been pushing for that. TTC and city officials have been pushing for those kind of revenue tools for a while, but the province hasn't allowed the city to actually enact them. So I think we could expect a kind of a renewed push for that kind of more diversified revenue stream so that if ridership drops again in some future pandemic, it may not be as bad of a financial disaster.
Do not say the words future pandemic on this podcast.
I mean, that's another interesting thing, though, that, transit agencies are still kind of pushing along with their plans to, for instance, buy new vehicles, right? And agencies are trying to build in pandemic protective measures in new vehicles that they buy. So, for instance, buses that have fewer touch points, fewer places where people are going to put their hands. It's kind of new technology like UV filters on air systems in vehicles so that virus particles are less likely to circulate and stuff. So transit agencies are unfortunately or fortunately are just kind of alarmingly getting ready for the next pandemic.
I hope that we never have to have the conversation about rolling out those new vehicles in time for the next pandemic. Ben, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ben Spurr, transportation reporter at the Toronto Star. That was The Big Story. If you'd like more, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Talk to us on Twitter at @TheBigStoryFPN. Send us an email. Let us know what you think. or The Big Story Podcast, all one word, all lowercase, at rci.rogers.com. And find us in your podcast player, rate, review, 5 stars, etc. You know the deal. Tell your friends, like, subscribe, everything. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.